Excelsior, Spider-Man fans, and welcome to another spectacular episode of the Spectacular Webs podcast, right here on the Spider-Man Crawl Space and Podomatic.com. Today, we start the second season. Yes, we've survived the first season. Everybody clap!
Hooray!
Thank God we weren't on Fox, because we wouldn't have made it past three episodes. of course, I am your primetime host, Thomas Primetime Mattis. And standing next to me today is my PIC, my partner in crime, Donna Mark. Donna Mark, how you doing tonight?
Hi, how you doing, everybody?
As I say tonight, when it's really 12:14 in the afternoon, just to peel back the fourth wall. As far as iTunes and emails, we only have one, and I will leave that up to our great speechwriter and spokesperson Donna Mark to say.
Oh yeah, okay. Let's see, what do we have? Ooh, okay, huh. 1 star out of 5, not so spectacular, it's titled. From Berserk Fury 819, September 11th, 2010. If you're going to insult me constantly, at least have the tact to insult my face, Thomas. Not in backhanded ways through this garbage podcast.
Now, before we comment on this golden nugget, shall we put it?
Yes.
Let's promise that we actually know who Berserk Fury is. He's the individual who we name dropped in the past couple episodes. Now, I did find it funny. In some sense, I'm willing to you know, just pump this up to it. You know, he did this on September 11th. You know, him being an angry Republican, he was angry at everybody. But, you know, I don't know if we should put too much tact into this. Being that it's somebody who we know, because on one hand, either he's joking, which it fails at being a joke, and if it he's real about it, really, there's nothing I can say. I'll leave comments up to you on that.
Well, I mean, speaking objectively here, I guess it makes you ponder what backhanded insults, what warrants a backhanded insult. I mean, I think he's referring to episode 12 where he said that Eddie Brock's whining to Peter Parker was akin to Berserk Fury on the crawl space.
I made a joke saying, you know, where I made a joke about where I did an impression of Eddie Brock, and I go, why? It's just, oh, I learned that from Berserk Fury. And it was a name drop joke. You know, I could have name dropped anybody. I could have said Phantom. I could have said Spidey Dude. I could have said Spider Girl. I could have said Brad Douglas. I could have said Cool Bailey. I decided to name drop him.
Okay. Well, I mean, because you did, there are a lot of different rivers that come from that dam, you know? I mean, the obvious insinuation is that you think he whines a lot. Not that you just chose
him. In hindsight, you know? Probably name-dropping somebody who's angry half the time and a whole lot of stuff probably wasn't a good idea. Next time, I'll make sure I'll name-drop somebody who usually in more good mood. I'll say, oh, here's my impression of Eddie Brock. Whine. I learned that from Donna Mark. So let's move on from that. Let's get right started into episode 14, which is, again, the first episode of the second season. This episode features Mysterio. So I will leave it up to Donna Mark for titling and synopsis.
Oh, yeah. The title is Blueprints, and as said before, the villain for this episode, for this season premiere, second season premiere, is Mysterio.
A.K.A. Quentin Beck, who we've seen before in the Black Cat Chameleon episode.
Correctamundo. We start this episode off with... What?
I said C.
C, yes.
As in Spanish, yes.
Gotcha. We start this episode off with Spider-Man web-slinging, considering the last thing we saw in the last season, which was when kissing him, he's wondering, you know, is that the one who I'm meant to be with or whatever? he doesn't say.
Oh!
After that, Wolf whistle and howl in the background. He gets jumped by Venom, pretty surprisingly. And as Venom's, you know,
well,
as
Venom, considering that, you know, Venom was supposedly defeated by, you know, Peter's great network of friends.
Oh, don't get me started on that. I left that back in the last season. I'm done with that.
Continue.
Right. Continuing from that, it actually turns out to be a dream. And as we pan out of the room, we learn that it is now winter in New York. Peter does make a list. I forget which order.
And he's checking it twice.
Ah, yes. But unlike Santa, well, I guess he does find out who's naughty and nice, but he's not Santa Claus. He's making a list, no puns please, to call Harry, talk to Gwen, find Eddie, and take care of Aunt May. He also needs to invest in some laundry detergent to fix his Spider-Man costume, since when he was whip-slinging out in the snow, it became all baggy and looked like a sweatshirt, which is kind of funny.
Well, I suggest OxyClean, because a dead man can't be wrong.
True. Peter goes to school and tries to find Gwen, but by happenstance, they just don't end up talking together. Meanwhile, I don't want to say construction site, but it's a group of trucks that are giving ESU a new set of computers, which, funnily enough, a guy named Stan works with. And as he's complaining about hot chocolate or something, they're attacked by a mysterious magician named Mysterio. And this guy apparently has a grudge on technology, and while people are in disbelief, he starts having them subject to his will just by mere mental suggestion. Peter, back at school, Peter again tries to talk to Gwen, but I'm sorry, you said something?
No, keep going. I missed my timing.
Okay, alright. Back at school, Peter tries to talk to Gwen again, but Liz Allen tries to grab him up and says, you know, I need more tutoring in my chemistry class or something like that. And he says, oh, yeah, sure. So here comes the love triangle, folks.
So you know what scene is Don's favorite.
I was gonna leave you for another harem screaming reference, but I guess we'll get into that a little later.
Yep.
Oh, dear. Later that day, Mysterio is at the Brooklyn/George Bridge. Attacking another truck, I suppose, where he thinks that's technology. And Spider-Man shows up on the scene to save everybody. But he falls weak to Mysterio's mental suggestion as well. And Mysterio, as a use of the getaway, chucks a truck off of the bridge. Peter jumps after it into the freezing ice-cold water and saves the guy, but it becomes sick in the process. We also learn after this, and after a scene of exposition between him and Liz and Mary Jane, and Gwen, who was just in agony that Liz is now all cozying up to Peter. We cut to a scene.
Uh-huh. I was laughing.
I heard you. Okay. We cut to a scene where it is a dinner scene between the Connors, Norman Osborn. It's at Norman Osborn's house, and the Warren brothers, not only Mr. Warren, but Professor Miles Warren, who will now be working at ESU. They conclude that since they need the best and brightest minds to work at the new facility, they're going to rehire Peter Parker. We cut back to, I believe it's Oscorp again, where Mysterio attacks the Technology Institute, and Spider-Man first takes him on and is attacked by his, what are those things called? I'm scrolling up. Homunculi? Yeah, and as Mysterio tries to get away, Spider-Man actually follows him through his teleportation trick. Through a series of battles, Spider-Man eventually defeats the homunculi and Mysterio by taking out a number of robots and amassed him to be somebody he doesn't recognize, despite the fact that he claims he's Quentin Beck, Camille's right-hand man from last season.
And the awesome Black Cat episode, which was awesome in so many ways. Black Cat, Chameleon, Black Cat, you know, the black suit Spider-Man, Black Cat. Did I mention Black Cat? There's, I think, one more thing from that episode that made it awesome. Oh, that's right, Black Cat!
I don't know if you can tell, folks, but he kind of likes Black Cat a little bit.
Just a little bit.
Yes. But we won't see it for a few episodes. At the end of the day, Peter receives a notification and a forward check from the Daily Bugle as an actual freelancing contracted photographer for the newspaper building.
Wait a minute, Jonah gave up some money? Oh god, I'm scared.
You're scared quite easily, aren't you?
Yeah.
While he's excited about this and wants us to call Gwen, he notices that he wants to call Gwen first, which must mean something. But before he can do that, Norman Osborn calls him to tell him that he's been hired back at the ESU lab. While Peter wants to talk to Gwen, Norman Osborn says, "Big things are happening in your life, Peter. It's not a chance to dilly-dally." So this starts a series of contentions which will play out for the rest of the season. We end the episode.
Don't you mean the rest of the series?
Yeah, series, as it were. We end the episode on the Tinkerer finding out that the Mysterio is actually planning a robot to go to jail, and he's still free. And through some funny dialogue, we learned that they are working for a mysterious mastermind called the Master Planner, and he has big plans for Spider-Man. And that was episode 14, titled Blueprints.
And before we get started on our talking points, I'm just going to apologize now if you hear me coughing, because you may have heard me cough in the synopsis about once or twice. I have a bit of a sore throat, so I'm just going to apologize now if I have to, you know, cough or clear my throat. But with that, I think a very, very good season opener. Let's get right into it with music. Let's talk about Mysterio's music.
You go ahead, because I don't remember a thing about music. I probably said something last time, but I don't remember this one.
To peel back the fourth wall to show that we're re-recording this episode.
Oh, they don't have to know that. It's all fresh and new.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you know, the thing about Mysterio's music is that there was a lot of... I'm trying to remember the name of the instrument, and it's escaping me right now, but it wasn't brass, but it wasn't... I want to say strings, but I think it was... It was more wind. Yeah.
Organ?
Organ, yeah, I mean, maybe some winds in there. And the reason I'm saying it is because it had that whole mystified... element to the music, you know, the whole mystique and not mystique, that's a character, but mystical, you know, element to its melody. You know, that, you know, sort of that cliche, you know, here's the magician. Ooh.
Yeah, it was very over the top, intentionally so. I mean, it was obviously over the top, but...
Well, it fits the character, considering, you know, who Quentin Beck and Mysterio is. You know, who is very over the top.
Mm-hmm. Especially this cartoon, yeah.
So, with music quickly covered, let's slide right into animation. And sliding is a very good segue, considering that we're talking about the snow effects.
Yeah. You go, and then I'll comment after you get your say.
In other words, he wants me to say stuff so he can work off because he can't remember.
or in other words, you say something funny and I counter that.
Well, you know, at the forefront, you know, it was very good. You know, snow effects are very hard to do, and they could be messed up so easily, and yet it feels like they did it perfectly in this episode.
Yeah, I remember you saying that. It's good because I believe it was in our interview where Greg Wiseman said that they implemented digital effects such as the breath on when people were outside and everything.
Yeah.
And it was stuff like that that made the snow seem all the more seamless. I mean, it was good stuff. It never looked too thick. It looked like it was snowing but not blizzarding. And I mean, it was nice use of animation.
It was a good rate of snowfall. I mean, there's a lot of times where somebody you'll see snow, especially in Christmas cartoons, where it's done so slow that it's bad, and, you know, it's obvious that layered on top or whatever. And at the same time, they could have done it too fast and made it blurry and more blizzard-like conditions, and it would have made it hard to see the animation itself. This had a good rate. it wasn't too fast and it wasn't too slow, and because of that, it integrated seamlessly into the animation itself. I mean, as somebody who studied animation, yeah, I know that, you know, the snow effect is something added after the fact on top of the animation. The animation was drawn without the snow effects, and then the effects were put in afterwards. But because it wasn't too fast, it wasn't too slow, and it was done perfectly, it integrated perfectly into the animation itself.
Yeah, it was good.
I basically said everything Don was going to say, so let's move on to talking about Mysterio's costume. Yet again, green! I love green!
What the heck is that?
Something Irish.
Are you Irish? All of a sudden?
No, but it's green. Okay, what?
There you go, folks.
Okay, Saint.
Let's go on. We can do this.
Okay, whatever. Let's again. Mysterio's costume, as I tried to make green jokes there. In reference to Saint Patty's Day. Again, like I said, green. Another Ditko villain. So obviously, green is the predominant color. What else did you like about the costume?
If you notice, Mysterio's, like, typically Mysterio's known most of all for, like, a baseball head, which is awesome. But, like, in this cartoon, you sort of see, like, a silhouette with two opaque circles to the sides, which implement a face and an eye. And it's not so against the original design, but it's a nice implement into the design to make it sort of like unique. And that was the one thing I always take away when I ever see it, this version of Mysterio, because you always know Mysterio is like the big blank thing where you can't see a face, but this one you sort of can see a face, but maybe you can. It's like I think it's basically it's a very good design. You know what I mean, with like the little circle in it.
Well, you know, the thing is, for the most part, we'll get into how many Mysterios there's been, but this is one of the few cases where, you know, we talked before where obviously Greg has had some influence from the Ultimate Universe.
Well, actually, I mean, I didn't read the parts with Ultimate Mysterio, so I honestly wouldn't know.
Well, but here's my point. Ultimate Mysterio hasn't shown up until recently. I believe his first appearance was in the Ultimate Spider-Man annual 3.
Oh, yeah, okay.
That was his first appearance, and so by that, you know, this season was coming out when that annual came out, if I remember right. So, yeah, I mean, he already had it set, written down, so there's no way to sit there and say that, you know, the costume design itself had any influence from the Ultimate version of Mysterio. So, yeah, it is a completely original and unique thing that he added to it. But for the most part, other than what you were talking about, it really is the design from the comics. Same color schemes, same everything.
Mm-hmm. There was one time I remember in the 90s, I think, where he had sort of like a smoke thing on his head instead of like the fishbowl, but that's not the classic design. So,
well, this is just once. Just once, I want to see a Mysterio with the fishbowl, and there's actually a goldfish swimming around. Just going around.
Dude, have you played the Spider-Man PlayStation game? Because you put on the debug mode, or the what-if mode, you can get that. Like, literally.
In what?
The PlayStation Spider-Man game.
Ah, yeah. Well, which PlayStation Spider-Man game?
The one, I guess it was on N64 as well. Like, the one where, basically where you can wear all the costumes, and the storyline is that he's being framed, and that Venom's involved and Black Cat's involved, and spoilers, it turns out to be Mysterio, and he fights Mysterio, and Mysterio's a giant. If you put in the what if mode, when you fight Mysterio, there's a fish bulb in his head, and Spider actually comments on it. He's like, "Is that a fish?" It's quite awesome.
Yeah. Well, again, since we're talking about Mysterio, let's talk about similarities and difference between this Mysterio and the one in the comics. And since Don is our comic historian. I will hand it over to Don.
Well, I mean, going back to his original appearance in ASM 13, as I take out my glasses and take out my big book, I mean, there's not really too much to differentiate from the original Mysterio. He was always sort of this stage man guy, Quentin Beck, who would always use his effects to try to, you know, typically, a lot of times he'll this happens in the 90s show too, and in this episode, a lot of times he'll kind of pose as the good guy. I guess he didn't do that too much here, but, and then, like, you know, say, oh, Spider-Man's the real menace, let me get him for you, but obviously he turns out to be a giant douche. But, like, the one thing that is different, like, Quentin Beck's the iconic one, and he's back for no reason, after blowing his head off in front of Daredevil, imagine that. But there have been two others. There have been Danny Burkhart, which was his former cellmate. And when he faked his death, he gave Danny Burkhart all the secrets of being Mysterio. And Danny Burkhart was Mysterio for a little bit in the early 80s, late 70s. And Francis Klum, I believe he was in The Evil That Men Do, correct? Because I've not read that, actually.
Yeah, so Francis Klum was the little brother of... I can't remember his big brother's first name, but they were these. They were basically drug dealers. They were mutants with small mutant transportation powers, and they were using it to deal drugs in Spider-Man, Black Hat, The Evil That Men Do by Kevin Smith and Terry and Rachel Dobson doing art. Because I really love talking about the Dobsons, and because of that, I will walk away now from saying that. But basically, because of what happened in The Evil That Men Do with Black Hat and Spider-Man, Francis Klum has a grudge against them, and he ends up using what little money is left after his, you know, the collapse of their empire to buy the Mysterio suit. And so he becomes Mysterio, and then I believe the next appearance is in... I know it's Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man. I can't remember the issue number, but I know it's when Spider-Man's wearing the Iron Man spider suit.
Well, that wasn't that with like Quentin Beck's like reanimated body as a demon or a soul or something like that?
I haven't got to read the entire show. All I remember is that like apparently multiple Mysterios showed up.
I don't remember. See, I remember. I know which time I read that, but I don't remember if it was multiple. I mean, I legitimately don't remember if there probably was or if there wasn't. But
yeah, I never got to see the second issue. I just remember the first issue where I remember, you know, again, the whole thing, you know, there was the supposed mob outside of parents wanting Peter to lose his job as teacher, and then Mysterio attacked. And so there's Peter directing his class, trying to threaten them out of harm as he's crawling on the ceiling in his Iron Man spider suit, which I actually thought was pretty neat.
Mm-hmm. That's the issue with him, like, being in the conveyor belt in the lunchroom, something like that?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah, I remember that. Cool.
I mean, for the most part, you know, Mysterio has always been over the top. He's always been, you know, very dramatic, you know, which, again, his character, you know, being that he's an actor.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times that ends up being his downfall, him wanting to take credit for it. It's sort of like the Riddler in it, to an extent, in, you know, the Riddler will do these crimes, but he does it because he wants to get noticed as the smartest person in the world.
Well, that's the thing, is because I'm in ASM, Amazing Spider-Man classes, we talked about someone who wrote in the original issue saying that, you know, it wasn't a later issue, but something where you, someone said that, you know, Mysterio is an interesting villain, but he only has one gimmick, basically, and once Spider-Man recognizes it, he really can't ever do anything to him. Or Mysterio can't really ever do anything to him. So, like, I like Mysterio, but Michael Bailey doesn't. But he is sort of a one-trick pony when you get down to it.
Which is interesting. I mean, he's definitely a B-list villain for Spider-Man's Rogue Gallery. So, with that, let's talk about the fight between Spider-Man and Mysterio, and really at the end. I mean, there was three fights. There was the first one on the bridge, the one at Oscorp, and then the one in the warehouse. So, you want to start off with that?
Yeah, because like the one on the bridge, Spider-Man pretty much gets spanked. Well, the first one, he gets jumped by all those homunculi, which, I mean, I guess they were kind of cute. I liked one part where the one, like, grabs on his leg, smiles, and then bites him. That, I thought that was kind of funny, but that was
alright. But small, cute things bite people, it's always funny. Just look at episode 8 of Sekri.
What?
Of Sekri.
Oh, is that an anime?
Yeah.
Okay. Take a shot, everybody. Take a wonderful shot.
Well, you can find Sekri on Hulu.com and Funimation.com.
Oh, Funimation. But I think you and I agreed in the edit original recording that we both liked the saloon battle the most.
Oh, yeah. Part of the reason we loved the saloon battle was it wasn't just the battle. The quality of the animation sort of grained a little bit. Like, it was like an old Western. And you had the classic saloon music going. And it played just like one of those classic saloon ball fights where, you know, he's hitting people, and out of nowhere, a Mysterio robot appears and bonks him over the head with a beer bottle.
Yeah, it was actually like the most violent part of the episode, which I liked because like it was played against with this really like Piccadilly kind of music.
Yeah,
and he had all this horrible violence.
And then they throw Peter out the window, and he lands on the sci-fi set, and then you have the sci-fi music playing, classic UFO music.
I think it's like a theremin or I forget how you pronounce that one instrument.
Yeah, but you know it. You had that interesting thing where you know again, Liz Allen was somewhat responsible for helping Spider-Man win this battle because she was the one that gave him the hint. You know, magicians are all about sleight of hand. You know, distract the eyes at one way so you can do things with your backhand on the other, and you get to that point where you know he says. You know, I just have to learn not to trust my eyes. And he uses his spider senses as he's, like, fighting all, you know, the tiger and the dragon. And it's really these other traps coming down.
Yes, exactly. That's why Liz is great.
I set it up and you knock it down. Did the little humunculi, I know they were used in the second fight. Were they ever used in the third fight?
Of this episode?
Yeah.
I don't think so. Because you're talking about like the one where Spider-Man eventually defeats him. I don't remember them being there. Because I think he destroyed pretty much most of them before they teleported. Yeah.
Yeah. With that being said, let's move on to our third talking point with story. Let's talk about the movement in the relationship of Peter and his harem.
No, it's not a harem. I mean... You say that all the time. It's really a threesome. I mean,
Wait. Did you just say Peter's in a threesome?
Okay. I meant love triangle.
Sure, yes. You did. We now know what Don's fantasy is. It involves Peter, Liz Allen, and Gwen Stacy.
Oh, shut up! I'll never get myself out of that one.
Nope, you won't.
The love triangle, not harem or threesome, between Liz, Gwen, and Peter was, in my opinion, the best part of the episode.
Well, you know, you have the again, you have the continuation of the romance that was the sort of difficult, strange, unique, romantic. Situation that involves Peter, you know, where, you know, you supposedly have this nerd and he's surrounded by girls that want to be with him, and which begs the question, if girls want to be around nerd like that, why weren't girls constantly surrounding me in high school? Oh, wait, they were, so never mind.
Promise the pen. Could you imagine?
Hell yeah. But... But no, it's serious, you know, it's continuing, and it's really setting up also what's going to be a big theme and the entire rest of this series. I would like to say season, but it's really serious, where, you know, what's going to happen between him and Gwen and Liz Allen?
Yes. I mean, like, he's not dating anybody here, but he's trying to talk to Gwen. He think his mind is in the right mind that he likes Gwen the best. But he's also aware of Liz's come-ons. And
feminine wiles?
Feminine wiles. Seduction techniques. But he's not... I mean, I think he thinks that, you know, this is not what I want, but at the same time, he's not sure. I mean, he doesn't know how to respond. Hasn't really happened to us. Peter Parker didn't before. I mean, he went through all that as Spider-Man with Black Cat, but here, when it's hitting his actual identity, it's new to him, and it's interesting to see how he responds to all this.
Well, the plain and simple fact is he's a 16-year-old male.
Mm-hmm.
16-year-old males tend to sometimes think with one certain part of their body, their second brain.
Unlike
a Stegosaurus, where they have two brains, and their tail brain is actually the bigger and smarter part, as opposed to their peanut brain that's in their head. In this case, the second brain that is in his tail, if we can put it, is actually the dumber one, and the one in his head is the smarter one.
He's thinking with his utility belt instead of his mask.
Yep.
Well, the joke's been said. I mean, but that's not true. I mean, it's like, that's...
Really?
That's how dudes act at that age, and that's, you know, especially during that situation.
But that's my point, is that that's what guys
do. I know that's your point. But, I mean, it's like, that's what I like about it, is because it is realistic. And I don't think we saw the. I don't think we've ever seen this in. It's sort of a subtext in the original issues, in the Lee Ditko issues. It's sort of there, but it's not really like. It's played more. I'm trying to think of the right word. It's played more to the front in this series. I mean, even in Ultimate Spider-Man, it was basically just him and MJ for the longest time. Then it was him and Kitty. But then, like, it was just like sort of like who was dating who.
Well, first of all, if I remember right, there wasn't a lot on him actually dating Liz Allen, more Betty Brant in the early issues. I'm sure you...
Well, no, I mean, like, my point is that, like, Liz would be after him. Flash would be after Liz. Liz would be after Peter. Peter would be after Betty. And Betty would always assume Peter was with other girls, despite the fact she's always with Liz. But like that's the thing. Like, even though Peter was always in seemingly turmoil, we argued on Amazing Spider-Man Classics, everybody, that
which that's the third time you pimped it.
You know, pimping ain't easy for a fool. But it's like what we were saying is that there's probably a part of him, especially during the fact that he was picked on so much as a kid. He probably enjoys this, and he will certainly enjoy, even if he doesn't realize it. He probably does get all this. You know, he has powers, and now he's getting attention for all these hot chicks. I mean, and really, it's not a negative part of his personality. It's a natural part of his psychology.
Yeah, it is. And I mean, with Ultimate, it's definitely something from The Amazing, because with Ultimate, it really wasn't that he was ever accused of chasing another girl. He was always with Mary Jane. Mary Jane was his best friend, was always his girlfriend, who he spent all his time with. When Stacy came into the picture, and they became friends with subtle jealousy there. It really wasn't until they broke up around Ultimate Spider-Man 80 because of the whole Hobgoblin and stuff like that, where he eventually ended up meeting Kitty Pryde, and they started dating, that's where that whole relationship aspect came into.
Yeah. I do remember... Mary Jane kind of being jealous that Gwen started living in this house. And, like, you know, I think she thought that, I only read the Badly one, so, like, I don't know if it was ever resolved that she thought that Gwen was in love with him.
It was slightly there, but, yeah, it was resolved, and they became friends. Okay. I mean, they're doing a lot more on the whole romantic angle in the current issues of Ultimate Spider-Man, which is one of the best comic books out there today and everybody should be reading.
Really?
If you don't support Ultimate Spider-Man, which is one of the best, then you don't have any right to complain when bad comics like, Amazing Spider-Man still continues.
Can you feel the seething hatred?
Yeah. Let's move on to talk about how this is the start of the Master Planner arc.
Master Planner introduces himself indirectly by the end of the episode, and this is what it's going to go over the next four episodes.
Wow, and Don. And Don said everything we were going to say. Shouldn't we really go more into who the Master Planner is, or should we wait till...
Well, I don't think we should spoil it. Everybody's seen it by now, but I think that there won't be much to talk about when it comes up if we spoil it now, you know?
Yeah, well, you know, and the thing is, they did give us a bit of a hint in the episode of who he was.
You think so?
Two metallic arms that stretch and that are like tentacles. Gee, I wonder who that's like.
Oh, in like the fight scene.
Yeah.
That was kind of subtle. I mean, yeah, I got you.
Well, let's move on to our last talking point, and that is the incredible, wonderful, stupendous cameo by Stan Lee. Which, after I saw this, my first thought was, okay, we got a cameo for Stan Lee, and the best we could do is giving him the role of Fleck from A Christmas Story.
I triple dog dare ya!
The guy who, stuck his tongue on the thing?
Yep.
Well, that's what he said. He's like, you ever stick your tongue on a frozen thing? I hate that. And like, are we getting punked? I hate that. They may seem to be a very disagreeable young man, elderly man, which is kind of funny.
I mean, I always love seeing Stan Lee's cameo because, God damn it, I support Stan Lee's push for a cameo Oscar.
Right. I mean, I suppose it's going to happen sooner or later because I think he has. I think, except for maybe the 60s show, he's had a cameo in every single Spider-Man media interpretation. Like, literally, except for maybe the electric company, but it was funny.
For that part, I think almost any Marvel thing. Hell, he's even, or anything he creates, I mean, he's a constant character in Hero Man, which is the anime that Stan Lee did that was, I'm just going to say here and say it, it's one of the top three best animes of the past decade.
You're making a lot of bold claims tonight, aren't you, Jeff Thomas?
Well, they're not bold when they're true. but, you know, in there, he's always in the coffee shop, you know, talking with Joey. So, Joey Jones. There's no more of an American or comic book name than Joey Jones.
Seriously, yeah.
No, it really is. There is nothing more of a comic book American name than Joey Jones. It's like Lois Lane. It's trying to think of the what
Bruce Banner.
Bruce Banner, yeah. Well, I mean, there's a certain name for characters who are named that
alliterative names.
Yeah, alliterative names. But no, I love these cameos.
See, people have been hating on that for a while, like in the movie specifically. Like, well, it's going to come out again.
Well, I don't see what the problem is. God damn it, the man's literally responsible for everything that we love. We can't get him a goddamn cameo?
Well, okay. I mean, you're going to invite emails in terms of, like, you know, who created who, you know? He is certainly responsible for bringing these characters out to life, but... He's not solely responsible.
He's not solely, but he's a big part. He's a big reason for the modern day comic, for good or for bad. You know, without what he'd done in the 60s and the 70s, his work on Iron Man, on Thor, on Captain America, on Spider-Man, on the Fantastic Four, you know, his ideas of having these characters, and for a large part, it was him who really pushed the idea of sort of the soap opera and sort of the more realistic characters, comic books wouldn't be where it is at, or be at, be where it is today. I can't speak.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Well, with that being said, let's move on to favorite lines, and again, because I usually have more, I'm going to just leave it to Donna Mark for his lines.
Good crap.
What?
No. I remember. It's at the end where it's like, okay, you got me. Okay, who are you again? Quentin Beck? I was a Camellia's right hand man. You arrested me. I did? Cool. Were you like the boat captain? No. I was a waiter. Demi-tar Spider-Man? Sure, whatever you say. Like, that was awesome, that whole run.
Well, that's awesome because it works. Because it's Spider-Man being Spider-Man. Like, who are you? I have no idea who, or I have a life. And then you have Quentin Beck again being overdramatic, you know. I was an actor. You know, again, which leads into, you know, what would, you know, when Tinker comes to see him and he says, I let just any fit, you know, why'd you make the robot in your image? It's like, and let any actor take credit for the work of Mysterio.
Yes, that was amazing.
Was that your other line?
Actually, that may have been my other line, but since it's been said,
Well, it, again, on the bridge, you know, Mysterio is the master of the mystique, and he goes, and Spider-Man goes, it seems to me that Mysterio is the master of talking about himself in the third person.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's the part where he goes into the world going, co. Okay, that hooked me up.
Yeah.
Which leads in, sort of, as I have a segue for the next line, which is when he gets caught, just like pops into. Oscorp goes, don't mind me, I just had to get out of the cold. Number four for me is, and Spidey strikes out the side. Now to eject the manager. Being a baseball fan, of course I'm going to love that. And then the final one is from Stan Lee himself. Are we being punked? I really hate that.
Yeah.
Well, with that being said, do you want to give a rating for this?
You know, this is a good episode. I like it. But I liked it more for the love triangle, I suppose, what I said before. More so than the Mysterio plot. I mean, there's nothing really wrong, but nothing really wowed me. And I don't want to think that I take points off of anything. It's just my rating is purely based on a five scale. Five web scale, how I enjoy. So I'll give it a 3.5 out of 5.
Well, with that being said, what did you feel was a better season opener? Season one or this one?
You know, it's difficult because this one had all the continuity built up in the last season, you know? And I gave the first episode of the series a higher grade because I felt that they got a lot of exposition out of the way pretty well. And this one, they don't have any explanation out of the way. They just have to continue their storyline. And while I liked how they did it, I think if you look at this episode, like, if you look at this episode and you don't see another episode of the series, then you're missing a lot of better episodes. And I think that this one kind of reflects off that.
So you're saying the first one was the better one?
I guess, yeah.
Well...
But, I mean, at the same time, I probably... See, I would probably watch this more than I would the first episode because this one, that one had more things to explain and introduce than this one does.
Yeah. Well, with that being said, you know, I'll give it a 3.5 out of 5, or should I say 3.5 webs out of 5. Very, very enjoyable. I love the fights. Yeah, there's better episodes. Again, the romantic triangle, for even as small of time as it has in the episode, it does get you hooked a little bit more. But, you know, it's an ultimate start, or it's just an interesting and awesome start to the Master Planner arc. But I'll agree, I think the first episode is definitely the better season opener, because it really got you hooked on the series. So, 3.5 was out of 5 for me, and 3 out of 5 webs for from Donna Mark. So
no, I said 3.5 as well.
Oh, you did? Okay, we both give it a 3.5. So, well, that's it. So, as usual, we have our little ending thing. Donna Mark, do you want to tell people where they can find you?
I am also trolling the internet as a co-host on both Amazing Spider-Man Classics podcast, hosted by John and Wilson, and the other co-host, Bertone. We both take place in that and Close Tiger Chronicles with Zach Joyner and a bevy of other co-hosts, which go over the 90s comic book clone saga from Spider-Man. And I am also a newest recruit of the Batman Universe comic podcast, where we, every 2 weeks, we go over the latest Batman comic books and debate on Batman news, and it's a lot of fun. And that's all you'll hear from me, because I am seriously spread too thin.
See, I popped your podcast in, Cherry, and now you're off to explore the world.
Oh, please don't say that again.
You can find me. Do I have to wait for you to throw up?
No, I'll mute myself while I do that. You just go ahead.
Wait, what did you just say?
I'll mute myself
throwing up. Oh, I thought you said you're going to beat yourself.
Just
wow, there's so many ways that a joke can be taken, but I have many places you can find me. I have my Thomas's Prerogative, which you can find at theanimeshaft.com. It's a video blog in which I spew on my prerogative, and as Don is actually one of my biggest fans, he can tell you how awesome they are.
I sure can.
That's not sarcasm, folks. He really means it. That's just normal tone. But I also have other podcasts I do. I have the Tokyo SOS podcast, a Godzilla podcast, where we review every movie, every Godzilla movie ever done. We're currently on Godzilla vs. the Sea Monster, and we hope to be getting that out soon. I have Hexcast, a podcast where, with my co-host Lori Thomas, I review every issue of Jim Balin's Terra Witch of the Black Rose, which we both feel is a very, very underappreciated comic. We currently have four total, but two episodes doing the comic proper out, and we're actually going to have a Halloween special out, so look for a special out on Halloween. You can find Hexcast at www.hexcastpodcast.podomatic.com. And by the way, just go back to Tokyo SOS, which I do with my co-host Jesse Garrett. You can find that at www.tokyosos.132productions.com. I am part of the Capes and Feathers podcast with Spider-Girl, Robert Bell. Jesse Garrett's also on that one, and Logan Daniels. Where we review every issue or every episode of the Justice League cartoon. That's been on hiatus. We hope to get that back up soon. And then, of course, I have the Anime Asylum, which I do with my friend Josh Dunham, which you can find at the Animation blog spot. And that's it for all the podcasts I do. Of course, we plug our friends, so we want to plug Brad Douglas and Spider-Man Crawl Space, which allow us to post new episodes on his site. Michael Bailey and Views from the Long Box, and from Crisis to Crisis, and from Tales from the JSA, and from Back to the Bins. And is he doing any other podcasts? Because I've lost track.
Podcasts. He's on Spider-Man Crossbones as well, right?
Yeah.
Well, there you go.
Of course, like I mentioned earlier, the Shaft podcast, which you can find at www.animeshaft, the Major Spoilers podcast, Clone Saga Chronicles, Batgirl the Oracle, Kaiju Cast, Nostalgia Critic, 2-in-1 Showcase, 22freaks.com,
DJ's Comics Cavalcade.
Yep. Again, listen to what you say. Search them out on the internet. They're great podcasts, so really check them out. Don, do you want to tell them where they can find the show and its forums?
Find the show at either Spectacular Whips Podcast at podmat.com or the Spider-Man Crawl Space Podcast, where I put them up. And you can comment on them and find them elsewhere at thecomicforums.com. Click on the episodes and then comment on our forum space after you listen to them.
And you can leave us feedback or fan mail or just tell us we suck at either our email address.
Like Berserk Fury did.
Yeah. SpectacularWebs@yahoo.com. Or you can go onto iTunes and give us a rating, which we'd very much appreciate, and give us iTunes reviews. Just search Spectacular Webs on iTunes. So that's it for this spectacular episode of the Spectacular Webs podcast. Next month, episode 15.
Craven.
Yeah, it's Craven. The Craven as a furry.
Oh.
I'll just leave that to the swelter in your mind for next month. So until... Until next time, all my kitties, stay spectacular. Living on the edge, body crawling, spinning webs, swinging from the highest ledge, he could leap above my head. Villains on the rise and the city's victimized, looking up with no surprise, arriving in the speed of time.
Let's get this show on the road, gang.
I'm Batman.
This looks like a job for Superman.
Monthly Mondays, available the third Monday of every month at twotruefreaks.libsyn.com.